All right, welcome to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy. I am Matt Dudley. You're listening to us on the airwaves of WOMR and WFMR-FM in Provincetown in Orleans. And also you can catch us streaming online at WOMR.org. This month on Focus on Energy, I am joined by Stefan Wallenberg with the Cape Light Compact's Power Supply Program and Lindsay Henderson with the Compact's Marketing Department to talk about something that you might not be thinking of now that the sun starts shining. Well, you're out of your house, you're at the beach. Hopefully you've kind of forgotten about what your electricity bill's doing nowadays. With the winter being gone, we have a little bit more sunshine to share with you today. Stefan, what's the sunshine we have to share?
Yeah, so just as we were anticipating, prices came down a lot. Our residential price went from a little bit above 15 down to 10.16 cents. So it's a pretty significant drop in price, which is just what we were expecting. And it's good news. Obviously, we'd like for it to be lower, and we were disappointed that our winter rates were as high as they were. But, we're pretty happy with where they are now.
And so folks may be feeling a bit of a sigh of relief now that the high electricity prices have come down. But is there a cautionary note that should go with that?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. It's a weird thing, right? So as people may have recalled if they've listened to the show or if they've read about this in the paper, the reason that our winter prices were so high was because of some issues that New England has with natural gas. We basically don't have enough pipeline in previous winters. We didn't have enough pipeline to get all of the gas we needed when we were using a ton of it for both heating and electricity production. So, what we've seen over the past couple of winters is really high prices during the winter and then lower prices during the rest of the year. So that's kind of what, we would expect to see going into the future. But this winter didn't turn out to be as bad as everyone thought it was going to be in terms of where, real-time prices were. So because of that, forward prices for next winter are not as bad as I might have thought they were had you asked me, 6 months ago or so. So people should be prepared for prices to go up again, but I'm not sure that they're going to go up as high as they were this past winter.
And that should be if and when it does happen around the January meter read?
Exactly. That would start in January.
With your February bill, is that correct?
Basically, yep. So it starts with consumption basically sometime in January, depending on when your meter read is, and then you would see it actually show up on the bill that you receive in February.
So what is the Cape Light Compact doing? What's going on in the region to try to alleviate some of the issues that have put constraints on the pipeline for natural gas, et cetera?
Yeah, well, so, the region has been talking about this issue for a couple of years now. The problem is what to actually do about it. Because at the end of the day, you have this problem where the government doesn't, dictate or mandate the construction of new gas pipelines or anything like that. It's really, private developers that step in to fill a need. And so it all comes down to those developers feeling like they're going to make money by, putting in more pipelines. So essentially, all of the states are trying to figure out how to provide that assurance that those developers think that they need in order to build a pipeline. They want to see basically guaranteed revenue over 15 or 20 years. And electric generators are unwilling to do that. So the different states are trying to figure out if and how the state itself should step in to do it. And they're trying to take kind of a coordinated approach, but the reality is that each one is doing something a little different. So, in Maine, the equivalent of the Public Utilities Commission in Maine actually got the authority from the legislator to contract for natural gas capacity themselves. So the government of Maine will go out and will, essentially contract for pipeline. Massachusetts, the legislature didn't do anything like that. So Massachusetts is taking a different approach where basically they're trying to make it so that electric distribution companies, so like Eversource or National Grid, can sign these contracts and then recover the dollars through the money that we spend on electricity. So there's a process to review whether or not that's a good idea, if it is a good idea to see how much pipeline we should be getting, that sort of thing. But there are a lot of questions in the air about how much we should get, if this is the right approach, that sort of thing.
When was the current system built?
So a lot of the pipelines that serve the region were built decades and decades ago. So we're talking about, you know, more than half a century in many cases. It's an aging system that has not had a lot of big improvements. There are already some moves to expand the pipeline a little bit. There is an existing pipeline called the Algonquin Pipeline, and there's a project to expand it. The problem is that some analysts don't think it's enough to expand it to get rid of the problem altogether. But other people think that it might be enough. So it's unclear exactly what the effect of that will be. But it probably won't get done until, you know, late 2016 at the very end. And so the problem that we have, right, is we don't know exactly what's going to happen this winter. Is it going to be like last winter where it's not so bad? Or is it going to be like a previous winter where it's terrible? So it's hard to plan, and all of the states are scrambling to figure out what to do.
And is there any pushback from the generation companies that use natural gas? I imagine they must be making a lot of money off the generation of electricity in the wintertime.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that they don't really care that much one way or the other. I mean, that's a generalization. They've taken a position, but they don't have as strong a stake as you would think, because basically they make money regardless of what gas prices are. They just have to charge more for electricity. Mm-hmm. So if gas is really expensive, then they have to charge a lot for the electricity that they sell. So their stake isn't that big. The bigger stake actually is for companies that own something like nuclear generation or companies that own the pipelines themselves. Obviously, they have a very strong interest in seeing more pipeline get built, because that's what they do.
So it's the old telltale sign of supply and demand.
Yep.
And this is actually a pretty good demonstration of how it trickles all the way down from supply to consumer.
Totally.
Because all of these little things that you wouldn't even think of are what's driving up your electricity cost.
Exactly.
There is a big push in the state of Massachusetts to increase the renewable energy that's produced, renewable electricity that's produced by 2030, something like
that. There are a lot of different goals. Yeah. There's, you know, 1,600 megawatts by 2020 of solar, although we're going to do that faster. There's the RPS, but yeah, there are lots of different goals.
And the Cape Light Compact, while we've been tasked with energy efficiency, per se, has been working through the sister corporation CVEC to bring some of those projects to the Cape and Vineyard.
Right.
What's the world of renewables looking like right now for folks?
Well, and so that's, I mean, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's kind of one of the questions that is making this discussion of natural gas pipeline even more confusing, right? Is that in theory, natural gas pipeline isn't the only thing that you could do. Like, if we could figure out how to use less gas or produce more electricity locally through renewables, those sorts of things, in theory, those would have many of the same effects. The question is, can we do them quickly enough? And are they the right choice? So it's really a question of what the priority is and what the right combination of things is going to be. But it actually produced 10% more than the original projections were, despite the absurd amount of snow that we got this last winter.
Great.
So yeah, we're all really, really excited about that. A lot of those other projects are doing well, producing really significant savings for the towns that are involved, especially because prices were so high this winter. It means
right.
The savings were even larger for them.
Right. And a lot of folks, when they call the Cape Light Compact, they are interested in solar renewable, photovoltaics on their home.
Mm-hmm.
Cape Light Compact obviously doesn't do a whole lot with that, but there are some programs out there for folks. I know that, especially with high prices, it's becoming a lot more attractive to enter into some of these contracts or to buy some solar panels.
Totally.
And from my understanding, it's not the same as it was about 5 years ago with, sure, you put up $40,000, we'll throw your solar panels on and it'll pay itself off in 25 years. What's you know anything about what's going on with that as far as homeowners in solar?
Yeah, I mean, so the interesting thing about solar in Massachusetts now is that you've got lots of options. It's almost like buying a car. You know, you can buy it, you could lease it, you could, you know, there's some things that maybe are kind of a weirdly akin to like Zipcar or something like that. There are a lot of options to people, available to people. People can, you know, the easiest option, or maybe not the easiest option, the most obvious option is you can just buy a system. So you can still do that. You know, you just mm-hmm. fork over the money, and it's not $40,000 anymore. That's the
right.
other exciting thing, is that prices have come way, 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 way down. So for a typical residential installation before tax incentives or anything like that, you know, you could be looking at $15,000 depending on the size of your roof and that sort of thing. But a lot less money than we were talking even 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
And so that's obviously still a pretty big capital investment for a lot of people. And You see them popping up all over the Cape. You see signs, hey, look up at my roof. I've got new solar panels. I've got free energy. Companies have taken a pretty good approach to marketing the sale of PV panels to residential end users. And I think it's taking the Cape by storm. Have you seen any of that stuff popping up?
Yeah, so a lot of people ask, you know, I saw this offer for free panels, you know, kind of along the lines of what you were saying. How's that possible? And so basically what's happening with that is the other option, or one of the other options, instead of purchasing the system outright, is doing a lease or what's called a power purchase agreement. And basically the idea with these things is that you have another company that actually installs the system and they own it. So you basically let them put the system on your roof, but you don't own it yourself. And then with power purchase agreement, you essentially agree to buy all of the electricity that the PV system produces at a certain rate. And that rate is usually lower than what you're paying for electricity at the time. And so you get savings that way. Or you lease it. And so basically you pay a certain number of dollars a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you get all of the electricity that it produces for free. And then again, there should be some savings there. But what makes those deals possible are all of the incentives behind it. So for instance, there is a 30% federal tax credit. So if you buy a system outright, you know, you get that tax credit yourself. If you lease from is taking that tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, you know, the other big incentive are what's called SRECs, or solar renewable energy certificates, which are very valuable because of basically a program that the state set up. So again, if you buy the system, you get the SRECs and you can sell them.
Mm-hmm.
If you lease it, then the company that you're leasing it from retains ownership and they sell them and they take that money.
And how easy is it to sell these SRECs as they come in for a, you know, layperson or a regular homeowner?
There are different ways to do it. There are companies where it's almost like eBay for SRECs. So they'll kind of help you with some of the paperwork and then you can say how much you want to get for them or that sort of thing. So you can do it that way and they take a cut. In theory, you can do it all yourself, but there's a fair amount of paperwork to it. But you really, you know, you have to pay a little bit of attention to it. What I always tell people when they're considering, you know, should I buy it or do a lease or PPA, I would say, if you are interested in being responsible for the system, if you don't mind doing the paperwork for the tax credits and the SRECs
mm-hmm.
and making sure that the system is running and that sort of thing, then you should try to purchase the system if you can come up with the money, because you'll probably retain more of the economic benefit. If, on the other hand, you'd rather just get the thing up there and have it get going, probably makes more sense for you to do a lease or a PPA. And again, you probably won't get the same level of savings as you would have if you purchased it, but you don't have to worry about anything. The other nice thing is that if you do a lease or a PPA, you're not responsible for maintaining the system or making sure it works, because that responsibility is put onto the company that owns it. So that's another, you know, reason why you might prefer one option over another.
Actually, kind of a nice little anecdote is my in-laws recently installed a solar array on their house, and I got an email from my father-in-law last week with his electric bill for the month of June, and it was -$186.
Love to see that.
So they're up in Vermont, and they built their house to accommodate solar when they built it back in the 80s, and it's really starting to pay off for them. But that's what you took advantage of some of that and financed it. For those folks that do produce more than they consume, do they get a check at the end of the year, or how does that work? Do you know?
Yeah. So what happens is basically, much like your in-laws, they'll rack up a credit on their bill, which will roll forward. So the utility is not going to cut you a check for excess production,
mm-hmm.
but it'll roll forward. And so the important thing that means is that you never want to install a system which is going to produce more electricity than you'll consume
right.
over the course of the year. So it's fine if, you know, June is usually the biggest month, or sometimes May, but it's fine if in a couple of months you're producing more electricity than you're going to use, as long as you'll make up for that later in the year. Because, yeah, you could end up with a bill that starts racking up this credit that you basically can't get access to. Which would be pretty frustrating. You know, if you did
just leave all the lights on for a long time.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Take that.
You
get like an electric car.
Take that, Eversource.
Yeah, run an extension cord to your neighbor's house. Or we are not recommending any of these things. But what people can do if that is a concern is they can actually assign credits to their neighbor or their church or whomever. They could figure out a way to make that work too, if they do have a system that's too big for their own consumption.
I'm just picturing this idea of a solar community where, you know, Shepley's Home Center down in Hyannis has got a solar field. I think it's on like 5 or 6 acres or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They produce as much electricity as that giant facility at Shepley's consumes. Are there any projects out there where there's a neighborhood or a community association that just puts up an array and shares the benefit with all of, you know, the residents?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's usually called community shared solar or solar garden. There are lots of, you know, names that it goes by. But yeah, the idea is that there are some people that don't have a roof that's good for solar. They have a north facing roof or dormers or shade, or they live in an apartment or whatever. And for those people, you know, that can be a really good option. So basically the idea is, yeah, you do a much bigger system and then you get a portion of the output. And again, there are kind of different ways that it can be configured. You can buy a share, or mm-hmm. you can basically just agree to purchase the output of a share or something like that. But there is an example of that in Brewster. That one's been up and going for a while. But it's an increasingly popular approach to doing solar. You know, one of the other nice things is that when you do a larger array like that, it becomes less expensive.
Right.
Which, you know, it makes sense. There are economies of scale there. But yeah, it's another great option. And in fact, the state has kind of singled it out for a type of solar development that they want to see more of, because it's a nice way to share the benefits of solar with people that otherwise wouldn't have access to it. Yeah, it's another great, great way to do solar.
So going back to these SRECs that you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
What is an SREC? What is it used for? Who are you selling it to? Why are you making money off of this?
Yes. All right. So an SREC is a type of REC, which is a renewable energy certificate. And so basically, in New England, what we do is we have a system where we track all of the environmental benefits of electricity that's produced from renewables through the system of certificates. So if, you know, if I'm a wind turbine or a solar panel or whatever, I'm essentially producing two things. I'm producing electricity, you know, that gets fed into the grid and is turning lights on and that sort of thing. And then I'm also producing this certificate. And the certificate records a bunch of information, how much energy was produced and when it was produced and where it was produced and by what kind of generator, emissions associated with it, that sort of thing. And so when that certificate is from a renewable energy generator, we call it a REC. So in New England, we have this centralized, basically, database of these certificates that tracks all of the generation in New England. And so people can trade them and buy them and sell them and retire them and that sort of thing. So the reason that these things have value is because many of the states in New England have what's called a renewable portfolio standard, or an RPS, which basically mandates it so that a certain percentage of electricity has to come from renewables. And they have different types. So there are requirements for the amount that has to be new from existing, from waste to energy, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in Massachusetts, we also have requirements for how much has to come from solar. And in fact, there are, you know, different tranches of that. But basically, that's what an SREC is. So the reason it has value is because energy suppliers are required to purchase a certain number of these SRECs for the, you know, basically the energy that they're delivering to customers.
So purchasing those SRECs would be less expensive than just building a renewable energy facility big enough to produce all of the required.
They could do that too. They, yeah. It doesn't matter where they get the SRECs from. They just have to have this a minimum percentage every year. And if they don't have that, they pay basically a penalty. So the, you know, the idea is that the SRECs are less expensive than the penalty. So they go out and they try to purchase these SRECs. And so you, you know, again, you end up with supply and demand. The demand is all of these suppliers that have to have a certain number for the load that they're serving. And then the supply is, you know, the generators, the PV generators that produce these RECs as they generate electricity.
So as you see PV come online a little bit more, you know, we see houses get covered everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen to the value of that SREC? And, you know, should it be an investment strategy for people that are installing solar, or is it just kind of a get it while it's hot kind of sale?
And this, I mean, the answer is that it's complicated. There are actually two different SREC programs depending on when you built your system. The new SREC program, unbelievably, is even more complicated than the last one. And basically, there's a formula that determines how much the suppliers, or excuse me, how much energy suppliers have to purchase, how many SRECs they have to get. And the reality is that it is it's really complicated. It's really complicated. So, you know, anyone could understand it if they took, you know, a couple hours to sit down and read the regs and right. kept up to date on how things were trading and that sort of thing. But for most people, it's probably not something that they're interested in spending a lot of time learning about. So for that reason, you know, again, there are good reasons why people might not be interested in taking a really active role in trading their SRECs, because it's really complicated. It's subject to, you know, how much PV generation is coming online at different times and what load is and all of these formulas that are incorporated in the regulations, all this sort of thing, which makes it just makes it complicated.
And all of this information might be kind of old news to the folks in Provincetown and Wellfleet who have been going through the Solarize Wellfleet and now Solarize Provincetown programs. With those folks, is there like a central resource for the town? I don't know very much about the Solarize our town projects, but is there a central resource for those recs that everybody can just kind of hand them over and say, hey, take care of this without, you know?
I don't know. Well, there are definitely, like I said, you know, there are definitely private companies that try to make it easier for homeowners that do maintain or retain ownership of the mm-hmm. recs and want to sell them. I don't think that there's anything specific for Solarize Provincetown and Wellfleet. You know, they have lease options or PPA options available, but I don't think there's something along the lines of what you're talking about, although that would be interesting.
You have one neighbor that takes it upon themselves to figure out all the details.
Yeah. And I should say, because of the complexity associated with SRECs, which make up the largest incentive for solar in Massachusetts, the Cape Light Compact worked on a pretty interesting project with Habitat for Humanity. I don't remember if we've mentioned it on the show or not.
Briefly.
Yeah, but it's worth mentioning again. Basically, the Cape Light Compact is making an upfront payment for all of the SRECs that these systems will produce over 10 years, which we think makes a lot of sense because we can use those SRECs for the load that we serve through our power supply program. And it makes it so that the homeowners don't have to worry about, you know, where SREC prices are and how they're fluctuating and where they'll be in the future and taking care of all of that paperwork and that sort of thing. So that's something that we're really excited about, and hopefully we'll be able to do that for more than just those, you know, couple of houses that we did at the very beginning. But we'll see. But it's kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, I think.
So that'll be interesting to look forward to, and I think that those Habitat homes are actually almost done and online. They are on my way into work, and they are coming along pretty quickly.
Yeah, Stefan and I actually attended the dedication ceremony a couple of weeks ago, so that was really exciting, and I think they're expecting to move in within the next couple of weeks.
Wow. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll be able to have them on for a future show once they get their first couple of electric bills, and
yeah,
we can let everybody know what...
That would be interesting.
How they're doing,
yeah.
And also, well, talking about Habitat for Humanity, anybody that's listening, take a look on their website because they are always looking for volunteers, and especially with some of their Builder Blitz projects that they have coming up in the summertime. It's really a great way to get together with your community, make some good friends, and have a good time for a great cause. And visit the Habitat for Humanity's website to get some more information. And then just look forward to hopefully another partnership with the Cape Light Compact in the future. That's not only in addition to the solar panels, but then also to energy efficiency, because they go hand in hand. One of the things that is really important for folks who are contemplating going solar is you should probably reduce the amount of energy that you consume before you go out and size a system, right? And if it's easy to do. Lindsay, a lot of people are using air conditioners right now.
Yes.
And I'm just picturing trying to figure out how to size your solar system. If you've got a big honking air conditioner that you turn on in the summertime and you want to end up with a net zero bill, that's probably a consideration when you go to do the sizing. There are some high efficiency options, right, for folks through the residential energy efficiency program?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, first thing would be to have an energy assessment to see if you need any insulation, which will help keep your house cooler in the summertime. And if you already have an existing ducted central air conditioning system, we do have an early replacement program right now. So if that existing system is in working condition and more than 12 years old, you could receive an additional $500 rebate for replacing that system.
Wow. So, and there's already incentives, I think we mentioned last month, of $500 per system.
Yep.
Lies upon us, and we've got the heat coming in quickly. Folks that may be thinking about calling to get an air conditioner installed or a mini split heat pump, call soon, because contractors get swamped and you probably won't be able to get anybody until October.
Yes.
In there, for folks who don't have a local contractor, are there any resources that the Compact has to put people in touch with, you know, with quality contractors that work in the area?
Yes. So on the MassSave website, there is a list of participating contractors in the area who are quality installation verification certified. So it's kind of an extra step that these particular contractors have been trained to do to make sure that the system has been properly installed.
Great. And for those folks that install a ducted system, you could get an additional incentive for using one of those contractors,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes.
And also the added benefit of potentially financing the equipment.
At compact.org.
Fantastic.
And don't forget to like us on Facebook as well, because we always have updates on there frequently.
Tips and tricks and all that. Well, Stefan, Lindsay, thank you very much. What we're going to do to take us out of the show is we're going to play some audio from a NEED Awards program from Washington, D.C. that the Compact's Administrator Maggie Downey actually just came back from last week. And it's a pretty interesting tune, written by a school teacher with a bunch of their energy education students. And it's performed to a tune that anyone out on the Outer Cape may be familiar with. So here it is, adapted and sung by the Calcutt Middle School out of Central Falls, Rhode Island, the National Energy Efficiency Development Project School of the Year, National Junior School of the Year, all about the forms of energy.
You know I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms. Yeah, it's pretty clear. There are two main types, potential and kinetic energy. Because you should know that one is stored and the other is in motion, moving all around the world. We read the science book, it tells us all the types. We know the sound that's loud is all the hype. If you've got motion, come on and dance it up. Energy's important, they might last no matter what. Yeah, our teacher, she told us all about the time. She says we need a little more energy to warm our minds. You know we won't be no energy wasters like you are. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along. Because you know I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms. You know I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms. Yeah, it's pretty clear. There are two main types, potential and kinetic energy. Because you should know that one is stored and the other is in motion, moving all around the world. We read the science book, it tells us all the types. We know the sound that's loud is all the hype. If you've got motion, come on and dance it up. Energy's important, they might last no matter what. Yeah, our teacher, she told us all about the time. She says we need a little more energy to warm our minds. You know we won't be no energy wasters like you are. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along. because you know I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms of energy. I'm all about the forms.